The grim 19th century German philosopher Schopenhauer proposed a parable that he said was a perfect description of human life. And here's how the parable goes. He said, imagine a person on a raft, and he's going down this hurtling rapids, you know. And he's got a pole, and he's able just to stave off the rocks. And if he's a really good sailor, he can stay afloat for a while. But the river is going one way. It's going over the falls. And so no matter how good he is, how long he stays up, eventually he and the raft will go over the fall to utter destruction. Now, grim image, yeah, but it's also, at one level, hard to argue with. That's human life, he said, is that we're going along this river, which is filled with dangers all the way, and is heading to one place, namely to death. And so it's a pretty telling image of life, at least when squinted at from one angle. Well, I was put in mind of Schopenhauer when I saw Joe Carnahan's new thriller called The Gray. It's a movie about kind of hard-boiled oilmen who work up in Canada and Alaska. And they're exposed to danger from wolf attacks. They have this figure, and it's a character named Otway, played by Liam Neeson, the great Irish actor. And his job is to shoot the wolves if they attack these oilmen. Well, as the movie opens up, we see Otway in this really raucous bar where all the men are. And he sneaks out of the bar, and then we see him go out to the field, and he puts his rifle in his mouth. He's about to kill himself. And then he sees this wolf, and he's roused to action, and he has to shoot him. Well, the very next day, they all leave on this trip, and they're going up to Alaska. And it's a terrible flight, and the weather's terrible, and the plane horrifically crashes, killing most people on board, but there are seven survivors. And now the movie is going to unfold as the story of this desperate struggle to live, faced with, you know, terrible weather. I remember as I watched the movie, I felt cold in the theater as I watched it. They're also up against their own, you know, fears and insecurities. And then finally, they're up against this terrible herd of wolves into whose territory they've inadvertently stumbled. One of the most creepy, frightening scenes for me, anyway, was one night as they're around this, you know, campfire desperately trying to stay warm, they see a wolf come, and then they see dozens of eyes of these hungry wolves out in the forest gloom. So it's set up as a kind of, you know, Jack London sort of story of survival up in the Alaskan wilderness. Well, because Liam Neeson's character is a experienced, you know, hunter, they follow his advice, and he tells them to move and to set up camp in various places, and he gets provisions from the plane, and so on. And despite all these efforts, the wolves continue to track them. At one point, they manage to kill a wolf, and they actually cook him and they eat him as kind of a sign of defiance, but it seems to make the wolves even more, you know, focused. And what's happening is, one by one, they're being picked off. Sometimes at night, sometimes even in broad daylight, the wolves are just tracking them down. Eventually, we get down to three, Liam Neeson's character and then two others, and one of them finally just kind of surrenders. He says, I'm just so worn out. And he said, I wanted to sit down here and look up at the beautiful mountain. He sees the mountain, and he waits for death. He waits for the wolves to get him. The two of them then move on, and then one of them is attacked by the wolves. He jumps into a river, and his foot gets trapped in rocks, and he drowns. So now we're down to Liam Neeson. We're down to the last, you know, figure. Now, a little bit earlier in the movie, the group had gathered around the campfire, and one of them was kind of religious and talked about God, talked about eternal life. I think he had prayed earlier, too, when some people, you know, they were dealing with the bodies of the dead. But Neeson's character says, no, I don't believe in these fantasies about God and eternal life. And then he sort of puffs out a breath of air, and he says, no, that's real. So he shows himself to be a kind of strict materialist, you know, this worldly sort of guy. But at this climactic moment, when everyone's gone, he's the last one left, he's surrounded by the wolves, he utters this really magnificent prayer. He looks up into the sky, and you can tell he hasn't named God, but he's shouting at God. You know, is do something, help me, not later, now. And it's this great, gut-wrenching, deeply personal prayer. He's reaching out to God. His prayer was so powerful, really, it reminded me of the prayer of Job. That paradigmatic sufferer who cries out to God in a similar way, sort of calling God into the dock. Well, no answer comes to Otway. So he says, kind of muttering under his breath, well, I'll have to do it myself. It's as though he's called to God, God didn't answer, and so he has to rely on himself. And the last scene of the movie is, takes out his great knife. He has a little liquor bottles he'd gotten from the plane, and he breaks those so they have these sharp edges. And he puts them between his fingers so they're like the claws of a wolf. And then as the camera comes in, he sort of narrows his eyes, imitating the wolf, as if to say, you know, come on. And then the screen goes black, and the credits roll. And so that's where I say I was thrown back on Schopenhauer. Think of the wolves as death, the inevitability of death. Here we are making our way through life, and life is, you know, is tough. It's a struggle, and we're being stalked by these wolves, and they're picking us off one by one. And that's true, isn't it? You know, as people go through life, and your friends and family and loved ones and others are dying, the wolves are picking you off. And at the end of the day, there's not much you can do about that. They're going to get you, too, in the end. And so it seems to be the message is, you know, go out at least with a struggle. Go out with a fight. The message maybe is a kind of grim existentialism. You know, where Sartre and Camus and company would say, la vie est absurde. I mean, life is just absurd. But the best you can do is kind of, you know, rage against the dying of the light. You can stand with your freedom and you can battle all the way down. There is no objective meaning. There's no purpose. There's no eternal life for God. But the best you can do is just, you know, fight, even though in the end it'll do you in. Well, is there any way that we religious people can respond to that? I mean, is that the only message that we have? Is that the right way to approach the inevitability of death? Well, I go back to Job, whom I mentioned. And by the way, if they ever made a movie of the Book of Job, I would nominate Liam Neeson as the main, as the title character. He'd be great Job, I think. But Job, who suffers more than any figure in the Bible, you know, everything that could possibly go wrong goes wrong. And Job, like Otway, calls out to God, calls him into the dock, justify yourself, explain this to me. Well, see, what Job doesn't get is what Otway was kind of expecting to get, which is an easy answer. Solve my problem right now, you know. Job doesn't get that. Instead, God gives this magnificent, disturbing, unnerving, wonderful speech where he takes Job on a tour of the whole cosmos, especially its anomalies. Where were you when I laid the foundations of the world? Where were you when I told the dawn when to break? Where were you when I established the stars and the planets? He takes him on a tour of all of the richly complex and interdependent anomalies and mysteries of the universe. So as to say, Job, your suffering is ingredient in a plan and a design that is so complex that I couldn't even in principle describe it to you. But I'm inviting you, God seems to be saying to Job, I'm inviting you to situate your suffering in that infinitely rich, complex context. And then you can see it as part of God's ultimate design. See, in some ways, what bugged me in the movie was this stark either-or. Either I get a definitive answer that solves my problem, or there's no God. There's actually a much more subtle answer, and that's the answer that God gives to Job, is I'm not going to solve the problem. I'm not going to solve the problem of human suffering or of death. But I am going to suggest to you that if you see your suffering in the context of this infinitely rich, complex design, you might begin to see it as a way, as a means, as a sacred secret.